What is up, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Combo's Court. Don't forget to rate, review, punch down on that subscribe button wherever you tune in to the show. And shouts to our sponsor, Prize Picks. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy. For a first deposit match up to $100, use code COMBO. That's right. Use code COMBO for a first deposit match up to $100. I'll leave a link in the show notes for that. Using code COMBO on Prize Picks is also a great way to support the show. Let's get into it. Jason Kempf of Hoops Tonight. Welcome back to the show. We talked about how things were before the pod, but how are things?
They're good, man. I can't complain. The body's feeling good.
Okay.
The show's doing well. Obviously, like, getting ready to gear up for our busy season, as you know. But, like, you know, it's funny. The NBA playoffs are an absolute grind, but they're just so much fun that, like, I've done it twice now with the volume where I've basically gone every single night during the playoffs live on YouTube,
and then
woken up every morning and done film sessions and things like that. And what's crazy is like, it's kind of just when you're in it, you know, it's like the first round, such a blur, right? Because there's just great games on every night.
Right.
It's almost like the March Madness of the NBA playoffs.
Exactly. Yeah. Cause games are almost going on. Yeah. Right. Like Saturday, Sunday, they're going on all day, you know? And then
second
round is kind of like a more focused version of the same thing, but with better teams. And then the NBA conference finals and finals, like, you can't beat that. And then also, like, during that phase, we shift to where all the games start at a decent hour too. So that's always nice.
Yeah.
Imagine on my side when those West Coast games.
Oh, dude, I literally can't even imagine how someone could do what I do on the East Coast. Like, I just don't, understand how you'd be able to do it, because, like, literally, like, shout out Paul. He's our lead producer at Hoops Tonight right now. Like, during that grind, it was another friend of mine named Ryan for the first 2 years. Like, they're up to like 2 a.m. every night, like turning the content around.
Yeah,
it's a lot of work.
I mean, if you're trying to cover a West Coast team on the East Coast, that is insane if they're going live. But let's stay on the East Coast for a second, because the last time you were here, we talked about the Knicks next move, and they made a lot of great moves, right? And they had a great win last night. OG back, plus 28 for OG Anunoby. In full health, Jason, what is this team's ceiling?
I think they have a championship ceiling. I think they're in that group with the guys that are, like, the way I've kind of looked at it at the top of the league is I look at, you know, kind of Denver and Boston being on their own tier. That second tier of teams that are like, legit championship contenders, but not on the same level as Denver and Boston, but not like kind of the long shot guys. That to me is like the Clippers have been there for a large part this year, but they're kind of eking out of that group. The Suns are kind of eking into that group. Minnesota to me has kind of just been in that tier all season long. But then after that, to me, there's like a group of teams that are like, they can win. It's just a long shot kind of tier. And to me, New York falls into that tier. They're just so physically overwhelming. That's the thing. And we haven't even really gotten a chance to see it yet. But in the thing that I think we've seen a lot during the stretch where the front court has been out is it's shined a real light on how physically imposing their backcourt is.
Yes.
Like watching Dante DiVincenzo in his physical ball pressure, and then obviously him stepping up in his offensive usage too. But Josh Hart, who's like just literally a Ford F-150 of a two guard, you know, just like a big body dude who just could cause so many problems. And what's crazy is, like, that to me is what I look at as an exciting potential for this team, is kind of layering that physical imposition on the game. Like, we haven't even seen him with Mitchell Robinson in with that core group. And, like, Mitchell Robinson damn near won the Cavs series just by bullying the Cavs front line on the offensive glass.
Right.
Julius Randle's capable of that, but obviously he's gone into every single playoff run coming off an injury. And I very much look at Julius as a rhythm player, kind of needs to be in a groove. So I'm hoping he can come back sooner than later. Then OG Anunoby obviously is one of the most physically imposing threes in the league. And then we talked about the backcourt a minute ago. And so, like, I don't see any reason why they, especially as the league, and you had mentioned to me last night that we might be talking about this today, but especially as the league has kind of shifted to a more physical brand of basketball, I think it plays directly into their strengths.
DiVincenzo, the way I would describe him is a hustle guy who happens to be skilled as well.
Yeah, I like that. Like Dante, like have you, it's always funny when you watch the clips. I remember that was the thing with Isaiah Thomas when LeBron had that dunk on him where his head didn't get above his waist in the 2017 conference. Right. I think it was in the conference finals. And then Isaiah Thomas, like in between game two or three or whatever, immediately released a video of him doing a windmill dunk in the like in the practice. Dante DiVincenzo is like a really good athlete, and I don't think a lot of people realize that. Like, this was a guy who was doing dunk contests and stuff when he was in high school, like a real athletic player. And I thought he shot the ball pretty well in Golden State last year, but like I thought the biggest thing that stood out last year for Golden State is he was one of their best point of attack defenders. And so to see him kind of add to that a more high level, like movement shooter game this year. Like last year he was kind of a spot up guy with Golden State. Like he's doing a lot of stuff off the move for the Knicks. And yeah, I just think talk about a free agent signing on the margins that ends up like being a massive home run. I think he's been a massive home run for them.
Most definitely. I mean, you've had some injuries, not as many as me, you know, during your playing career. And the thing that scares me about the Julius Randle thing is like, me personally, I could always deal with pain, but like instability, right? And I've dealt with knee instability is like the thing that could really get into your mind. So for him, I just hope that shoulder stays in place. Now, there's going to be some pain, but if that shoulder could stay in place, that's what's going to really matter for this Knicks team. Because, you know, I love watching the free-flowing basketball that they're playing without him, but the Knicks ceiling is with an All-NBA player in Julius Randle.
Yeah, they need it. Like that to me, like really the two of them actually complement each other really well, meaning Jalen Brunson and Randle, in the sense that like Brunson's your textbook skill guard that, like a very, very versatile skill guard that can attack in a bunch of different ways, but he's a skill guard. And to me, like pairing a skill guard with a mismatch attacking forward is like the best like pairing that you can have. Even as you look down at like Jokic Murray, it's just like a on steroids version of that same concept, right? Like any sort of size mismatch, Jokic can exploit on the inside. Any sort of skill mismatch, Murray can exploit on the outside. And so like, obviously Brunson and Randle aren't on that level. That's not what I'm trying to say. My point is like their skill sets mesh really well. And specifically why I look at a Julius Randle is super important is against switching defenses in particular, which you inevitably will run into at some point in the playoffs, even amongst teams that run drop, they will go through stretches where they switch, and having a guy that can like consistently just kind of play bully ball. It's so important. Like I was literally watching Pacers. I was watching Pacers Thunder this morning.
Yeah.
And just like having Pascal Siakam every single time he got, you know, Isaiah Joe or Shai Gilgeous-Alexander on a switch, and he could just walk him down to the block and just bury him under the basket. Like that's a huge advantage in a playoff series. And that's why I agree with you. I think Randall's so important. The one thing I'll say about Randle though, is his injury being an upper body thing. I agree with you. The instability is a little sketchy, but I always worry about that like mental element of planting hard. Like, I don't know about you. I'm still dealing with that right now with my Achilles, but I dealt with it pretty badly when I broke my foot in college. But like there's like the I'm healthy phase, and then there's the I trust this foot or trust this knee phase. And so thankfully, like for Julius, like I think he trusts his lower body's probably feeling better than it has at this point in the season ever, because he's been able to kind of ease his way as he's ramping up. So I'm encouraged. I'm more just worried about, can he get enough games under his belt to rebuild his rhythm? Because he's such a rhythm player in terms of his like jump shot. Like he's the guy who can go 7 for 24 for like 2 weeks before he like gets it figured out, you know?
Yeah. Speaking of fit, I mean, the OG fit with those two is just impeccable. But I do want to shift to your Lakers, because this has been the most roller coaster season I've ever seen in my entire life, Jason. One day it's, can the Lakers make the play-ins? The next day is, are the Lakers legit title contenders? Will they win it all? What have you made of it, and what have you made of the hot streak?
Yeah, you know, I have a theory. This is not based on any sort of reporting at all, but The Lakers season makes a lot more sense when you split it into thirds. Like they come out the gates and they go 15-9. Inconsistent during that stretch, a lot of their wins, they would like be trailing by 8-9 points at the end of the third quarter, and then just have this, you know, crazy fourth. As they've been one of the best fourth quarter teams and clutch teams in the league this year. But like they go 15-9 counting the in-season tournament win. in the in-season tournament, you know, they beat the Suns, then they beat the Pelicans, then they beat the Pacers. They slow down a Pacers team that the Celtics couldn't even slow down, like a really impressive stretch to the in-season tournament. Then I think two things happened. One, immediately at that point, they hoisted a trophy in the middle of the season. So, like, I think there was, like, a real relaxation at that point. And specifically for a guy like LeBron, like a 39-year-old dude like that, like, I think – and I really do think the leader of your team, that kind of attitude bleeds over into everything else. And, like, look at what happened immediately after that. They lost to a Dallas Mavericks team right after the in-season tournament championship game that was completely devastated by injuries, and they lost to them. Then they turned around and lost to the Spurs, and the Spurs had three wins to that point in the season. Like, they literally immediately relaxed after winning the in-season tournament. They go 3-10 over the next 13 games, right? Then there's like a turning point game on January 7th. I think it was against the Clippers, if I remember correctly. Everyone is like, they're just going to get destroyed by the Clippers. And part of the story leading into that was, like, during that 3-10 stretch, Darvin Ham started messing with the starting lineup. And I really do think there was a push from some, I have no reporting on this, but I really do think there was, like, some passive regressive, like LeBron and AD and some of the other core guys were just done with Darvin. And I think they were hoping that they could kind of pout their way into a midseason coaching change. And I think that in combination with the relaxation after the in-season tournament kind of led to that 3-10 stretch, obviously some lineup stuff in there too. But once they beat the Clippers, they've been really good since then. They are 19-11 in their last 30 games. They've been sixth in offense over that span. They're 12-5 in their last 17 games. And they're number two in offense over that span in particular. And so, like, they were good to start the season, and then they've been really good here at this late stretch. They just have this really bad stretch in the middle that absolutely destroyed their chances in the standings. All of that said, I still feel exactly the same way I felt about them after the Denver Nuggets series last year. After the Denver Nuggets series last year, I was like, this team is good. They can beat a lot of teams, but in order for the matchup resiliency to win four playoff rounds, they got to get a real two-way athlete in the backcourt. Like, they just have to do it. They got to get someone that's an Alex Caruso, Bruce Brown type of player that you can put next to their skill guards, guard the other team's best player, chase over the top, funnel into Anthony Davis, all that kind of stuff. They didn't do it over the summer, and they didn't do it at the deadline. And so now I feel exactly the same. Like, certain matchups, like, I think they're going to beat Oklahoma City if they get them in a series. I think they can beat Minnesota just because Minnesota's half-court offense is such an issue. Like, I think that, but if they run into Denver, they're losing. If they run into Sacramento with their speed guards, they're losing. They run into the Clippers with all their switching. I'm worried about them too. Like, that's the thing. I think they're entirely matchup dependent now. And so that window of them sneaking through almost requires some injuries to key teams and maybe an upset from somebody else around the way so that they don't have to play a specific team. And, like, that's just a lot to ask. And so, you know, I'm a fan of the team. Obviously, I'm rooting for them, but I don't really see a likely path this year, if that makes sense.
So a tough margin for error, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're just not. To me, they need their games to go a very specific way. Like, their skill guards can only score against, like, drop coverages. Their skill guards cannot score in switching coverages. They can't beat people off the dribble, right? So, like, they're and then also when they face really fast guards, like, Austin Reeves can slide his feet and play really fundamentally sound defense and get contests on Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. But De'Aaron Fox, he didn't even see Austin. Like, he's just going right around him every single time because he's too fast. And so,
doesn't Fox present that problem for almost any team, though?
Yes, but I think I think just like with anything, it's about mitigation. Like, how many Suns fans have you heard tell you lately, like, oh, Nurkic is the Jokic stopper? And it's like, I mean, yeah, he can make him work harder than others, but I think if they played a seven-gamer that Jokic would put up big numbers against Nurkic. Like, to me, it's like, it's not about can you stop De'Aaron Fox, it's can you make him work hard and kind of make the – he had 40-something the other night, Fox did against the Lakers. Like, he was just killing him, man. Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, you mentioned the Suns, and, you know, a few weeks back I mentioned on another show that I have right here, it's an in-studio show, that – I was never high on the Suns, but I would say styles make fights, and it could be interesting if the Suns and Nuggets match up, because maybe you could go some small ball, KD playing the five, stretch Jokic out, who knows? There's actually, like, a backstory with Nurkic and Jokic, right? Like, they were both in Denver. Jokic kind of took his spot. Maybe there's some added motivation there. Is the Suns the Nuggets' kryptonite?
So here's the thing. They have some distinct advantages, And those are like Kevin Durant, when he's making his pull-up jump shot, can get shots off over Aaron Gordon. And then Nurkic is big and strong enough to at least prevent Jokic from just burying him under the basket every single time. Mm-hmm. And I honestly had some success on the offensive glass in that matchup the other day as well. They also have, just like you've talked about, just like the sheer amount of like speed on the perimeter to put some of these Denver players into space.
Yep.
Here's the thing. I tend to think that if we really zoom in on what happened in that game the other night, the Suns came out guns blazing. Grayson Allen makes 8 straight threes to start the game, right? And the Nuggets, a little bit lax. Jokic is not being very aggressive. It has a bunch of turnovers. We're middle third quarter, and the Nuggets kind of hit the gas. And from there, they methodically outplayed Phoenix the rest of the game.
Yeah.
And through that stretch, like what happened in that fourth quarter? Like KD got the same shots that he got in OT, but he missed them. Because here's the thing. Like when you take tough pull-up jump shots, sometimes you make 2-3 in a row. Sometimes you miss 2-3 in a row. Sometimes you miss 5-6 in a row. That's the nature of that kind of variance, right? And like,
yeah.
And that's the thing. Like it was one of those weird games where like we look at it as like, oh, look at this, KD and Bradley Beal. They shot the Suns into a win in Denver. It's like they also damn near shot themselves into a loss. And during like the Nuggets, like they had a 12-0 run at the end of that game where they got great looks every time down the floor and forced the Suns into difficult shots every time down the floor. And if KD doesn't make his textbook high hesitation three on the right wing or left wing, that game's over. So like my thing is like, I think a Suns series with Denver would go exactly like it did last year. I think they'd have a game. I think they'd have a game or two where both of the guy, all three of their core guys shoot super, super well. But at the end of the day, the fundamental problem in that matchup is Denver's going to get great shots every single game. And for Phoenix, they're going to get tough shots every single game. It's just a question of whether or not they can make them. Now, that said, like I do, when I look at biggest threat, the Suns are encroaching on the Clippers for me in that department. I really do think like the Suns are one of the best like chances to beat Denver. Mm. I just am so high on Denver. I would make them a substantial favorite against everybody in the conference, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think a big part of that is Jokic is the best player in the world. And I think the gap is actually widening. If you watch, like it really is. And then the way the roster is constructed around Jokic, I mean, that makes it even tougher.
Can I ask you a question? Cause I, you know, every once in a while I get in trouble. You're always the guy that kind of like has my back a little bit when I get into the burner. Like, remember when I had the Jalen Brunson over John Morant take over the summer?
Yeah.
Which by the way, I mean like Jalen Brunson has been so good this year. Anyway, like I got in trouble the other day, like 2 weeks ago, because I said Jokic's peak, the level he's at right now, is higher than the peaks that KD and Steph reached in their career in terms of dominance of the league. And every KD and Steph fan was ready to kill me. What was your take on that? Do you think Jokic is reaching a level of individual dominance that's higher than what Steph and KD reached?
I think KD for sure. I think Steph's 2017 season when he was the unanimous MVP, that was kind of like a ridiculous peak. But who would I rather have on my basketball team? Jokic. Me personally. Well,
to clarify really quick though, like, so for instance, Steph in 2015 won the title, but that was not a dominant playoff run. Like LeBron probably outplayed him in that NBA Finals series. Steph was really good. He played like a superstar. He played like a top tier superstar, but like that wasn't a dominant playoff run. It was just, he came out on top. 2016, obviously not a dominant playoff run. 17-18, it's just always hard to say because like the two of the top three players in the world were on the same team. 2022 was one of those playoff runs where like, during the same playoff run, we thought, like, because Giannis almost single-handedly beat the Celtics without Chris Middleton, remember? Like, Steph won the title that year, and I do believe he deserved to be recognized as the best player in the world after that 2022 season, but it wasn't, like, a dominant, like, no one's kind of in the same tier kind of thing. We left last year's playoff run like, oh, he just ripped through everyone. He's just better than everyone.
Yeah.
Like, this is different, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, his gap between him and the rest of the league is closer to like Jordan's gap between him and the rest of the league more than like Steph and KD. I mean, Steph and KD were always playing with Bron, and you could always say Bron was the best player in the league during those years.
Yeah, well, that's the way I look at it. I remember the last time I remember feeling this way was LeBron in during that like 2012-2013 stretch. Because like again, even for LeBron, from like 2014, remember it was the KD MVP year. From 2014 to 2020, I still think LeBron was the best player in the world. But I thought KD and Steph had encroached on his territory enough that it was like at least a conversation. You know what I mean? To where it's like, Steph fans legitimately believed he was better. You know, KD fans legitimately believed he was better. You might find the occasional national guy who would say one of those guys is better. But I think if you pulled NBA fans, 90%+ right now would say Jokic is better than everybody. If you pulled NBA personnel, I think like 95% or more would say that Jokic is. I think this rivals that stretch with LeBron where he was like won the title in 2012. Led the World Cup team or the Olympic team, then won in 2013. In 2013, he should have won unanimous MVP. Remember, that was the Gary Washburn voted for Carmelo year. So that to me is the last time we saw a stretch like this where it's like, oh, this guy's just better than everybody. You know what I mean? And so I just wanted to give Jokic that credit because I do think what he's doing right now is exceptionally rare and is in like a pretty crazy stratosphere.
Yeah, not to get too crazy, but I had Adam Maras on the pod and I talked to him about is Jokic's GOAT window still open? And he believes it is. I mean, he's a Denver Nuggets guy, but I'm saying if he wins five or six more, I mean.
He's 29, so that's the one tricky thing. Yeah, but let's put it this way. If he got a three-peat, when we haven't seen that since the Kobe Shaq Lakers, if he got a three-peat in this era,
right
now we're talking about because I don't think he's in a similar situation to LeBron where he has no chance to get six titles. I don't think just because of age related stuff. And honestly, too, you got to remember he's on a team with some guys that have some injury histories with Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr. too. That's always something to keep in mind. They also have they're going to eventually have to do some form of soft rebuild. And that's where a guy like Peyton Watson could be massively important. But if he went. If he won, let's say he won four titles and there's a three-peat in there. So he wins this year and next year, and then maybe misses 2 years and then wins a fourth. And he's going to win his third MVP this year. Who's the last guy to have three MVPs? It's been a long time. It's LeBron, right? So
Bird had three in a row.
Yeah, Bird had three in a row. And there's a case Jokic should have had four in a row. I mean, I thought he kind of punted the end of last year. So I think there's a very, to get the GOAT, with LeBron, it's a very slim shot. Cause to me, MJ, his resume is just so it's hard to even fathom what his resume looks like. So it's a hard territory to encroach on, but I would agree that it's open. He just needs to, Jokic needs to continue this dominance over the next 4 to 5 years is basically the path.
And you know what helps this case? I mean, look, the chances are he wins four is low, but they are developing the young talent while competing for championships, which really helps Jokic.
Really well, too. That's the thing. So if you look down the roster, Murray and MPJ, provided they stay healthy, are more or less on Jokic's timeline, right? Mm-hmm. But Aaron Gordon and Aaron Gordon, how old is Aaron Gordon? I think Aaron Gordon might only be 29, too.
Yeah, late 20s, I believe.
Yeah, he's late 20s. So Aaron Gordon, it's just a question of whether or not they can keep paying all these guys. But if they end up having to slot Peyton Watson in at the four and Christian Brown in at the two over KCP, because KCP is the guy that's kind of on the older end of the spectrum there. If you can get those two guys through skill development to fill into those spots, it can be a real window extender.
Okay, we're going to do some rapid fire. We don't do this often on Compost Court.
All right.
So here we go. We got some questions here. Let's start with, put your GM cap on, SGA or Ant-Man? Who do you have for the rest of their careers?
I lean towards Ant. I really do think that Ant at his ceiling is going to have that crazy combination of physical imposition, downhill rim pressure, the pull-up shooting, and then that. I'm sure you saw the defensive possession against PG last night where he ripped him. I think he has the potential to go to do that for an entire series where he just snatches another superstar's soul. And yeah. I don't think Shea quite has that ceiling. I do think Shea's a little bit better than him right now, but I think in the long run, Ant's going to be better.
Fill in the blank. Prime Wemby will average blank points per game.
I actually just went over this yesterday on my show. So he's averaging 26 points and 13 rebounds per 36 minutes right now. And he's a really inconsistent shooter playing alongside guys that very rarely set him up with easy shots. And this is like going to be a guy who kills teams with low hanging fruit when he starts playing with good players. The stat line I put down is like a realistic like 5 year stretch for his prime was 32 points, 15 rebounds, 7 assists, and then like around 6 steals plus blocks per game. I think that's realistically on the table for him as like an extended stretch in his prime.
I think the guy cares about winning a lot, but I do think he cares about stats as well. I wouldn't be surprised if he averages more than 32 at some point.
Yeah, that's definitely on the table. I more just think, like, obviously when he's in his prime, the Spurs are going to put him on a good team. And he'll be sharing touches and stuff. It's kind of like Giannis. Like, Giannis, as he was rising, we were like, oh, this dude could average 40 just running and dunking on everybody. But it's inevitably you end up on a good team and now you're sharing touches. So, yeah, I think I'm with you. I absolutely think he could average 35.
Who's going to win, Tyson or Paul?
Oh, gosh. Mike Tyson, I would guess. He just has to get one, right? Like I don't think I don't think he's felt a punch like that before. I don't think that's in the same stratosphere.
Fact or fiction, Team USA goes undefeated in Paris.
I'm going to go fact. One note, though. Anthony Davis better be ready to play some interior defense against some big European bigs, because that's his own personal weakness. And now he'll be flanked by some good players that'll help him. But man, like that is, I think that would be a big challenge for Anthony Davis to go overseas. But oh, here's a quick reverse question: who would you start at center, Embiid or Anthony Davis, in a lineup with Steph, Tatum, KD, and LeBron?
Anthony Davis.
I would too. I think so too. But yeah. But again, he's going to need to be prepared to bang with
Anthony
with the
Davis.
Centers.
Just serves better as a role guy when it comes to defense and offense, you know?
100% agree. And I think there's some switchability in that group with Tatum, KD, LeBron, and then you can with Steph, you just hedge and recover. I think that's what they would end up doing.
I don't know if you saw this going around on Twitter or X. Are you done with the 90s?
Ugh. Here's what irritates me about that. Take any basketball game today, and it's the best the NBA has ever been. Take any basketball game today and you'll find a 90-second stretch where they all look like idiots out there. All I see are these examples. It's like, look at this stretch from 1987 where this guy dribbled it off his foot and looked like an idiot. It's like, have you watched Jordan Poole this week? Like, have you watched any of these guys? Literally, I'm going to be watching Lakers Kings tonight. I bet you there's two or three, you know, four or five possession stretches where everyone, you know, just collectively pees on their leg and it looks terrible. Like, this is, yes, basketball is better now than it was in the 90s, but I think that the 90s is getting a little bit of an unfair shake right now.
I saw a clip of Muggsy Bogues stripping Michael Jordan, and they were like, Muggsy Bogues blocks Michael Jordan. I'm done with the 90s.
Did you see the Ben Simmons treatment for MJ one? The one where
No.
MJ's just dribbling around the three-point line and they're just ignoring him and letting him shoot, and everyone's like, look, they're giving him the Ben Simmons treatment. I'm like, yeah, back in an era where like both teams might take 5 or 6 threes in the entire game, like it's not the same as like Ben Simmons getting ignored in a league where we take 40 threes a game, you know. It's totally different.
Most definitely. A few more. Greatest cereal ever.
I'm on the fence with this one, but I'm going to go with Frosted Flakes.
Oh, me too. You can have it as
you can have it as a snack when there's no milk. Like I used to just put some Frosted Flakes in a cup and just snack out of it like chips.
that was my morning breakfast. Sports Center and Frosted Flakes when I was a kid, you know.
That's okay. What's your grown adult breakfast?
Oh man, it's either a combo shake, which is like a green shake with like, you know,
all the
kale,
stuff.
Spinach, yeah, all the stuff you like, you know, or it's like a few hard boiled eggs with avocado. It changed a lot.
I have a textbook 5-part breakfast every single morning. I have 3 over medium eggs. I have oatmeal. I have a banana. I have yogurt, and then I have coffee and athletic greens.
Wait, all 5?
All every single morning.
Wow. Yeah. You're a bulking phase.
Well, it's more just like, dude, I have found if I don't have a good big breakfast, like I deal with like energy dips throughout the day. So like
Do you wait some time or it's right in the morning early?
I can't eat right away. So I'll wake up and I'll enjoy my 2 cups of coffee. I have 2 8-ounce cups of coffee every morning. I'm very much a creature of habit. And then I'll have my 5-part breakfast and then I'll like afterwards. So I really do need to like wake up a little bit before I start eating.
Better shooter, Klay Thompson or Ray Allen?
Klay Thompson, but Again, this kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier, like relative to his peers, Ray Allen was, you know, obviously transcendent, but like the game just gets better and better. And like Clay, I think just had like, I'll put it one step further. I think Clay, when he was hot, was an even better shooter than Steph. Just when he was hot, like he had these insane, because of his height and release point, he could get on these hot streaks where like you couldn't guard him because he was so tall too. You know, like obviously Steph's a better shooter than Clay, but like, and he'd get hot more frequently than Clay. But do you remember prime Clay when he would get hot? It was like, you couldn't do anything.
Yeah. He was more flammable than Steph was. Like he had 38 and a quarter.
He's 6'7" and he's got a lightning quick release and he could shoot on the move. And so like, again, when he was hot, like there's a certain element with Steph where it's like, if we throw enough attention at him. But like, I mean, like Clay, like look at the shots that he was hitting in that 2016 game six against the Thunder, like 35 footers off of awkward footwork at the top of the key extended, like in transition on the move. Like Clay. Yeah. To me, Clay's the best, definitely a better shooter than Ray Allen.
Bird or Magic?
I've always been drawn to the Larry Bird archetype in that like kind of like back to the basket mismatch attacking. Well, the Magic, they have a lot more similarities than people think, but like I think Bird brought the best combination of playmaking and scoring between the two.
And a higher peak, I believe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Best chance to win a title not named the Nuggets or the Celtics.
I've been on the fence on this one all season, and it's been a bunch of different teams. And up until recently, it's been the Clippers to me, but I'm like one more week of mediocre Clippers basketball and good Suns basketball from picking the Suns. I don't know if you've been watching the Suns much lately, but they've been defending a lot better, like just in general. And they like for stretches because they can get lazy sometimes. But when they really lock in defensively, they can be good. And KD is like four straight 35 plus point games. Like KD is just killing everybody right now. So I'm just gonna go out on a limb and say the Suns as my third right now.
One event you would add to the All-Star game.
I would get rid of the actual game and I'd run two Elam ending games to 24. My theory is that 48 minutes is too much to ask for those guys. Like that's my theory. So like put the starters out there, let them play to 24 twos and threes. Put the bench guys out there, let them play to 24 twos and threes. And then I do king of the court by position group as the third phase. So I do all the guards play king of the court against each other. So like Steph and Dame and all those guys, mm-hmm. then all the forwards. So like KD, LeBron, Giannis, that kind of thing. And then I'd have Jokic, Embiid, AD just play king of the court. And I'd just let, like, I think that's the best way to get them to actually try.
Yeah. One-on-one in the All-Star game, one-on-one in the Olympics. I really want to see it. All right. Yeah. Last one. Hate to put you on the spot, Jason. Best podcast in the world.
Overall podcast in the world. That's a tough one for me because I don't really listen to any non-sports podcasts. I'm going to say this. So like I know he's been getting into some trouble lately, but the person that I am that I most look up to in my specific profession of like NBA league-wide analyst, JJ Redick. I think like when I there are a bunch of guys that I appreciate in the team specific side that are really smart. Pete Zayas, who covers the Lakers, is a guy that has really helped shape my basketball worldview in a bunch of different ways and someone that I admire a lot. But specifically, JJ on the national level, like when I don't listen to a ton of sports podcasts because I try to take a break from sports whenever I can.
Yeah.
But like when I like during the playoffs, like I'll turn on a JJ pod when I'm like at the gym one day and I'm like, this dude's so good at this.
Yeah.
Like he's an excellent communicator, really understands the X's and O's and enjoys breaking it down. It brings an impartial perspective. But at the same time, one of the things I appreciate about JJ is he's not afraid to be honest about how he feels about a player. So he'll be like, this guy's good at this. This guy sucks at that. And like so many of the former players are either like, this guy sucks. All these guys suck. Or all these guys are amazing and there's nothing in between. Like they kind of take the company line. And I just think JJ, I think JJ is the best in the world at covering the league at a national level.
Real quick, how do you balance following your, because this kind of ties into some of JJ's recent comments. How do you go about following your basketball curiosity and also feeding the algo?
So there's a fine line. To me, it's a really simple process. You need to find some urgency in every episode. So like whether that is an instant reaction to a specific game or hitting a major team. And then once you do that, you can talk about whatever you want on the back half. So like we'll do shows with 3-4 segments in it on it every single day. And like I'm going to hit Pacers Thunder today and I'm excited about it. And we're going to get in the weeds, but I'm not leading with Pacers Thunder. If I do, I understand the honor in that, but it's not smart from a business perspective. So you bet I'm going to find something yesterday. I don't know if it'll be something like the Knicks because they're a bigger fan base, or like even the Celtics or something like that. But I'm going to find a bigger topic to kind of frame the show around in terms of like getting people's attention. And then I'm free to do whatever I want on the back half. And like that to me is the fine line. Like I'm a big believer in like stick true to yourself, talk about what you want to talk about, but we always have to acknowledge there's a business side to it. However, with JJ, I do kind of agree with some of the pushback in the sense of like, if you don't like doing First Take, don't do First Take. Like, you don't have to. He has a YouTube channel with over 1 million subscribers. Like, he can talk about whatever he wants in the way that he wants to do it. But that said, like, JJ is a smart man for on his YouTube channel, like talking about the Lakers and talking about the Warriors. Like, you need, even though they're playing teams, I know, but like, just do that and then talk about the stuff that's in the weeds after. Like, you gotta play the game, man. We got bills to pay, right?
Most definitely. Jason, great stuff. Where can we find you? Social media, everywhere else?
On Twitter @_JasonLT, Hoops Tonight is the YouTube channel and the podcast feed. We're also going live tonight after Kings Lakers. Big one for the AD got embarrassed by Domantas Sabonis. They've multiple times this season. They're 0-3 against the Kings. Desperately need this win on the road in Sacramento tonight. Do you think the Lakers bounce back or no?
No.
But we'll be going live on YouTube right after the game. Maybe I'll be shouting out combo for being right.
Jason, talk soon.
See you, buddy.